Okay, before we get into this week's shiur, just a couple of follow-ups from last week. How many of you were here last week? That's maybe a few of you. Last week we discussed the famous Jalen Brunson jersey, Shaila. So, first of all, it's awesome because all these kids are talking about it, so much so that both kids went to the same elementary school and their principal is inviting them both tomorrow to bring the jersey with them, talk about their halachic shaila. I'm zooming in to give a halachic perspective on it. It's just like an amazing thing that I got an email just before Shabbos from the father of the other kid, not the kid that emailed me, telling me the whole story and exactly what happened. But having said that, one thing I did want to follow up on is that I misquoted the Gemara last week. So the primary Gemara, which is what I thought was the basis for the whole sugya, it was an important detail, but not important to the conclusion of the Shaila. The detail that I misquoted was I mentioned that the Gemara B'Metzia says that if someone is Yorid L'Toch Sada Shel Chaveiro and he plants it, Shalom B'Rishus, that Yadav Al Tachtona, and I said that that means that you pay, well, let's not say the mistake I said. What that means is, the correct way of interpreting, the way Rashi understands, is that you pay the lesser of the two amounts between the improvement of the value of the field, that the increased value of the field from the fellow planting it, and the expenses incurred in doing so. I did not mention expenses incurred. I said something else. That's the other option. It doesn't make a difference in the Shaila because what were the expenses incurred in getting Jalen Brunson to sign the jersey? $0.00, right? So it's the lesser of the two is going to be is still going to be zero. But just wanted, for accuracy's sake, wanted to go back to that. To that citation of the Gemara. It could be, though, after I got the email from the other boy's father, which, if you recall last week, for those who were here, we gave him a name and we said, I don't know his name, let's call him Dave. His name is actually Dove, so we were like very, very close. But it could be that there were expenses incurred because the way he actually got the jersey is a crazy story. The way he actually got to meet Jalen Brunson is that he and his brother were walking around downtown Indianapolis on Friday before All-Star Weekend, and they were wearing Jalen Brunson jerseys, and an older African-American couple came over to them and said, "Hey, are you guys Jalen Brunson fans?" And they're like, "Why, we are. How did you know?" And they said, "Oh, it's because you're wearing a shirt that says Brunson on the back." And they said, "Because we're his parents." And so these kids were like, "No way!" And they showed him pictures, of Jalen as a little boy and whatever, So the parents, he said the mom was like kvelling. She had so much nachas that people were wearing his jersey. I don't know why she doesn't just go to Madison Square Garden. She'll see 15,000 people wearing his jersey. But anyway, she was loving it. And she said, "You guys want to meet him?" And they're like, "Yeah." And she said, "Just text me tomorrow night. You exchange numbers. Text me tomorrow night after the slam dunk contest, and we'll see if we can get you down." Didn't work out. I'm going to say Shabbos, they couldn't get past security or something. So on Sunday morning, she texts them, if you guys are staying nearby the hotel, this hotel where the players are staying, come over now, we'll get you, you can meet our son. So they went over there, and they went through a lot of security, whatever, the whole story, and they got in, and they waited a half hour, and Jalen Brunson came down, was very nice to them, and took pictures with them, and signed the jersey. So anyway, so now when you think about what the lesser of the two expenses was, again, the lesser of the two between the improvement in the value of the jersey versus the expenses incurred, they might have taken, I didn't ask, they might have taken an Uber over to the, so it could be that the cost of the Uber were the expenses incurred in getting the jersey signed. I don't know. So maybe that. But anyway, all's well that ends well. They were, everyone seems to have been happy at the end of the story. So, okay, so let's get into this week's shiur. So, two shailas this week. One shaila is not a new shaila. Last week, if you recall, we did three shailas. So I figured I'll just introduce one new one and just reuse one of the ones from last week, and we'll see how that goes. So one of the ones that we mentioned last week, another one that we mentioned last week that we didn't do last week, I did as a Temen Halacha this week. But the one that has not yet been a Temen Halacha and we didn't vote in last week was the following. When I was in Los Angeles, I met a fellow who, very, very nice fellow. His name is Mayor Graff. He hosted the Friday night Oneg when I was in Los Angeles, And or whatever, Friday night tish, Friday night, I don't know how these things are marketed, what you call it, it's all the same, they describe the same thing. A Friday night get together with some food and drink and good friends in Devrei Torah around the table, and around the tish. And he had mentioned to me that he is a somewhat of a chazan. He likes to sing. He likes to sing at weddings also. And he's been trying to get voice lessons from people who know what they're doing. So he tried a number of different voice coaches, and none of them were all that great. You know, or they weren't the right shidduch for him. I don't know if he's, you know, but then he found this a female voice coach who is fantastic. He said, "Mamish, a different league." He said he wants to be able to daven. You know, I'll read you his lashon. I'm following up on the Rav's request to look into the question I asked. I recently started seeing a female vocal therapist and singing voice specialist. She is a licensed and board certified speech and language pathologist who has dedicated her career to helping professionals improve and optimize their voice. My goal is to improve my singing skills from a Shabbos, Yontif, Yom Noraim, Chazen, to weddings and other simchas as well. Most of the lessons are me singing and going through different exercises. But sometimes she'll sing a couple of words back to me to further explain the exercise or assignment. Meaning she'll say, "No, do this," and she'll sing like three words back. You ever take voice coaching? Ever did? With a male or female? A male, okay. Is that how it works? Meaning it's just a couple of words back that they'll sing back. Yeah, okay. So is this a problem of Kalisha? That was his shaila. I thought it was a good shaila. Another shaila that came up this week, I got an email from Rabbi Hartstein. Anyone know Rabbi Hartstein? Lev HaTorah, right? Yeah. So, great guy. So I feel like he's one of those guys that anytime anyone says his name, they just say, "Great guy." You know, like, Rabbi Hartstein emailed me asking me what my thoughts were about the air up water bottles. I said, "The what, what?" And he explained to me, he sent me a few articles. Ever see one of these? This is an air-up water bottle. It looks like a regular water bottle, but it is not a regular water bottle. What it does, the shtick is, this is German engineering at its finest. You put in fresh water into the bottle. When you sip out of the straw, you are sipping fresh water out of the straw. All that's coming out is fresh water. But because of this little thing that goes around the mouth of the bottle, you don't even put your mouth on this thing. You just sip in the straw. But because of that little thing, your brain convinces you that what you are drinking is actually a flavored beverage. So this little disc, this is a watermelon flavor, as you can see from the color. But your brain convinces you that you are drinking a flavored beverage. So he asked whether this is permissible or not. When you push it all the way down like so, you'll just sip it out. It will taste like water. You pull it up just a drop like that, you sip it, and it tastes like a watermelon flavored beverage. Mamish. Now, if you were to take a sip of water that tastes like watermelon, spit it into a cup, and then drink it from that cup, it will taste like plain water. It is mind blowing, right? This is, so he wanted to know, does this need hashkacha? Do you need hashkacha on this, this pod? And he said, by the way, I asked Rabbi Sapovsky about it, and he said, "I don't see what the Isser would possibly be." And he pointed out that on Rav Bednarsh's Halacha Chat, Rav Bednarsh wrote in his Halacha Chat, let's see if I have it over here, Rav Bednarsh wrote, "Great question. This is exactly the sugya of Recha Milsa, taste that comes from transferred smell. And since it is a strong smell in a small bottle, and it is intended for that purpose, we are machmir that Recha Milsa afilu b'dieved. So you need a hechsher." So Rabbi Sablovsky said, "I can't imagine what the problem would be." Rabbi Bednarsh said, "I can't imagine what the heter would be." So what is the halacha about this? So obviously, okay, so that is shaila number two. So shaila number one, we have the three words of Kol Isha with the voice lessons. And shaila number two is the Air Up bottle. I did not go out and buy one. My wife heard me talking to Rabbi Hartstein in voice messages back and forth, and she's like, "Are you talking about the Air Up water bottle?" I said, "Yeah." She's like, "Well, Chani has one. Chani is my daughter." I said, "When did Chani get one?" So my wife just went up to Chani's room and came back with this. So I said to Chani, "Are you sure you're allowed to have one?" So she said that she's like, "Oh my gosh!" So she called one of her friends who also has one, and she said, "My father said it might be an issue. We need to look into it." And her friend said, "Don't worry, my dad said it's okay." So far, Rabbi Sablovsky and Chani's friend's dad are on team okay, and Rav Bednarsh thinks that it might be a problem. So that is our shaila. So let's take our vote. All those who would want to talk about three words of Kol Isha. Ooh, okay, good. All those who want to talk about Air Up. It's a little more for Air Up. Let's see what the Zoom chat is. Let's see what the Zoom vote. Oh, a lot of votes on Zoom. 1, 2, 1, 2. 2, Rav Hartstein, exclamation point, 1, 2. Okay, so it's pretty even on the Zoom chat. Okay, so I guess Air Up. Yeah, I guess that's what it's going to be. By the way, these are very popular. They're much more popular than you think. I know you may have never seen it before. You may have never thought about it before. But I was learning with a bar mitzvah boy last week. Boy from my shul having a bar mitzvah this Shabbos, so you know the rabbi thing, right? So I was sitting with the bar mitzvah boy, and I said at the end of our meeting, "Do you have any questions?" He said, "Yeah, are Air Ups okay?" So I'm like, "You know what?" So he said, "You know the water bottles that make you." He said, "Everyone in my class has it." So the entire Yeshiva's Darchei Torah 7th grade has Air Up. So this is a very important shaila. Basically, what we need to know is, does it need Ashkacha? Because currently it does not have Ashkacha. Oh, I should add, the Star K website, someone told me that the Star K, I don't know if it's on their website or not, had said that it does require Ashkacha. So what is the issue? So in order to discuss the issue with any level of intelligence whatsoever, we first need to understand what is the magic of Air Up. Now, the reason initially, when someone asked me this a few months ago, the way it was described to me, I said, "Oh, it's for sure mutter." Because the way it was described to me was that you're smelling this pod, I mean, as you're drinking, your nose is close enough that you're smelling it, and because you're smelling it, you convince yourself, you know, that it's just a mind game, that even though you're ingesting only water, because you're smelling it, you feel that you're tasting it. That is not the technology of the Air Up. The technology is, and I don't really fully understand it, to be completely honest, but over here on the top of the lid, there's a teeny tiny hole, and in the pod, there's also a teeny tiny, there are two holes actually, one on the inside and one on the outside. And essentially, inside, if you were to open up this pod, which my daughter did not give me permission to do, but if you were to open up this pod, if you were to crack it open, cut it open, and pull it apart, as someone online did, you would find a piece of like almost like cotton that is saturated and soaked in a very strong smelling watermelon smelly thing, right? Meaning all of the smell is inside. If you smell it from up close, you could kind of detect it, but it's really enclosed in here. All of the smell is on the inside. So how does the smell get from the inside this pod, through magically into your taste buds to let you believe that you're tasting watermelon water? So the way it works, apparently, is that there are teeny tiny air bubbles that come out into the water. The air that flows through the inside of this pod, remember I said there's a teeny tiny hole in there? When you suck on the straw, air comes through this pod and gets the strong aroma of the the flavorful thing that's inside of it. I wish I had a better name for it. Of the flavorful piece of cotton that's inside of it. And that air then comes out into your mouth together with the water. But the air is in the form of teeny tiny air bubbles that are imperceptible. So it comes out into your mouth. What you're essentially bringing into your mouth simultaneously is plain fresh water and flavor and smelly air. Smelly sounds bad. Fragrant air, right? You're simultaneously ingesting both. Now, fragrant air coming into your mouth somehow triggers, because your taste and your smell are connected to each other, it triggers your sense of smell, and that therefore affects your sense of taste, and you feel that you are drinking water that is that has the taste of whatever flavor pod that is. That is the technology. Great. Now, what's was that at all clear? Okay, so what is the halacha now that we have some basic knowledge of the technology behind it? What is the halacha? I should also mention that on their website they say that all of their flavors are made with just fruits and spices and things like that, that there is nothing, it's vegan and everything else. I mean, so the chances of something really not kosher being here are kind of low, but, still, we require hashgacha on things, especially in the flavor industry. In the flavor industry, things can be, very, very tricky. So probably it's the kind of thing that would require hashgacha. So first thing to think of is, well, is there, if I'm smelling it, is there any issur to smell it if it's not kosher? Meaning, if I have something in front of me that's not kosher, is there any issur to smell it? So the halacha is that if something is asur bahana'a, you're not allowed to smell it. So let's say you're not supposed to enjoy the fragrance of it. So if something is asur bahana'a, let's say it's basar b'chalav, so then you would not be, or avodah zarah, or whatever, so we would not be able to enjoy the fragrance of it. That is not the issue over here. This is not an issur hana'a. I think we're pretty sure about that. Now, it would seem the Minchas Yaakov in Klal Lamed Hei quotes several Rishonim who say that in general you're not allowed to smell non-kosher foods, that you're not supposed to go around smelling non-kosher things. Forget about it, Israel. Why are you not allowed to smell non-kosher foods? This is part of the larger sugya of Recha Milsa. That Recha Milsa means that an aroma is significant, and if aroma is significant, it means that you're not allowed to smell non-kosher foods. So Milchus Yaakov quotes a number of Rishonim who hold that way. However, in the Tshuva Samuna Shmuel, Simen Mem Hei, he says it's mutter to smell non-kosher foods. And he brings a raya. His raya is from musk. Musk is a glandular secretion of a non-kosher animal, right? So according to a number of Rishonim, musk is not kosher. You are not allowed to eat musk. It is not from a kosher animal. Yet, the Gemara in Brachos, Yeshiva's learning Brachos this year, the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Mem Gimel Amad Aleph tells us that the bracha on smelling musk is borei minei besamim. Well, wait just a minute. If you are not allowed to smell non-kosher food, how could there be a bracha on smelling musk, which is non-kosher food? So the fact that there's a bracha bar minei besamim clearly demonstrates that not only are you allowed to smell non-kosher food, there's a bracha for doing it. What about recha? Recha is not about smelling non-kosher food. Recha is about eating food that has the aroma of non-kosher imbued within it or embedded within it. What's the classic example of recha? You cook kosher food and non-kosher food in the same oven, and the aroma of the non-kosher food affects the kosher food. You take your kosher chalent out of the oven and you smell it and you're like, there was pork in the oven at the same time. But you taste it tastes exactly the same as regular chalent. But when you smell it, you can smell the... So that's recha. It's eating food that's imbued with the taste of non-kosher. But to smell non-kosher food, that is perfectly permissible. The Mishnah Berurah paskens like the Emunah Shmuel, that it's mutter. However, he says, still not a great idea. The Mishnah Berurah writes in the Bir Halacha, not a great idea to smell non-kosher food. Shema yavo li'achlo. You're going to smell non-kosher food. You're going to say, oh, that smells delicious. And you're going to want to come to eat the non-kosher food, and therefore it is not a good idea. Now, I don't think anyone is going to drink this and then say, ooh, I want to crack open that pod and suck on that piece of cotton, right? Meaning this is a very unlikely Shema Yavo Liachlo. Mishnah Berurah made his own gezeira, essentially, meaning it doesn't really exist as a formal gezeiras chazal. So when it's a reasonable concern, we're concerned for it. When it's not a reasonable concern, we're not concerned for it. So that is not the issue over here. What is the issue over here? The real issue is Recha Milsa, meaning we said, what is Recha? What's the issue of Recha? When the smell of something non-kosher is imbued into something kosher. Well, is that what's happening over here? When I drink the water, the aroma of the whatever's inside this pod is embedded in the water. So isn't that exactly Recha Milsa? I'll tell you who thinks that's exactly Recha Milsa. Rav Bednarsh. He says this is exactly the sugya of Recha Milsa. Right? So let's back up a second to talk about that sugya of Recha Milsa. It's a Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Ayin Vav. A lot of Yoredei is based in Pesachim Daf Ayin Vav. The Gemara records a machlokas between Rav and Levi, whether Recha Milsa or Recha Lav Milsa. Is the aroma of something significant or is it not halachically significant? Case in the Gemara, you have kosher meat cooked in the same oven, but not touching, just in the same oven with non-kosher meat. So according to Rav, the recha of the non-kosher meat makes the kosher meat no longer kosher. Recha milsa, the recha affects the kosher meat. Levi, however, says, nah, recha lav milsa, it has no effect whatsoever. How do we paskin? Rashi writes that we follow Levi. Tosas writes, in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, we follow Rav. The Rif and the Rambam, the Rif in Chulin and the Rambam Machos Surus Perek Tes Vav Alach Lam and Gimel say that we paskin like Levi. However, even Levi wouldn't allow it lechatchila. Meaning we paskin like Levi, the Recha Lav Mil. So you could ignore the Recha; it's nothing. Don't worry about it. But lechatchila, you shouldn't generate a situation of Recha. Now, if that's the case in Shulchan Aruch, how do we paskin in Shulchan Aruch? Shulchan Aruch Sim Kuf Ches in Yoredeya. Paskins like Levi, Recha is Lav Milsa, but the Mechaber, like the Rif and the Rambam, which is not at all surprising, the Mechaber is always like the Rif and the Rambam, the Mechaber says that you're not allowed to do it lechatchila. So you shouldn't cook kosher meat and non-kosher meat simultaneously in your oven uncovered. Probably just a good policy not to have non-kosher meat ever cooking in your oven. Just good policy. But anyway, the Ramah then adds a number of chumras that pretty much move the needle a little bit more towards Rav's side of Recha Milsa. Ramah says that the minig is we don't cook kosher and non-kosher or milk and meat together in the same oven, even if it's a big oven where the Recha is going to be able to likely not affect the other one. Then the Ramah says there are a number of situations where even Levi would agree that Recha is Milsa. Chametz, that's cooked together with Kasher LePesach stuff. If something's a Davar Charif, if the oven is not properly ventilated, so even Levi's going to say Recha Milsa. What does it mean, ventilation? What's that? This is what Benarsh, I think, was referring to, right? Ventilation would be like our ovens are all ventilated, right? They have vents in the back where the hot air or the smoke is able to escape, and that's why the oven is connected into the chimney or whatever, and it all goes out. There is one type of oven you likely have in your kitchen that is not ventilated, and that is a microwave oven. Rabbi Forst Shlita writes in his Kashrus book that a microwave may have a greater problem of Recha than a regular oven. Because in a regular oven, you have the escape of the Recha. So what does Ramah say? That if the oven is not ventilated, even we who paskin Recha Lav Milsa are going to say Recha Milsa. So where does that leave us over here? Ventilated or not ventilated? What are you saying? Ventilated? It says people on Zoom would ventilate. No, it's all totally enclosed in plastic, right? There's no vent over here. It goes straight from the plastic into your mouth, right? It's all completely, completely enclosed. The reach is all in there and it goes straight into your mouth. There's no ventilation. And that, I believe, is where Rav Bednar Shlita was coming from. That's why he thought that, and probably where the Star K was coming from, that they thought it would require hashkacha, and it would be a problem without a hashkacha. I did not have a chance to speak to Rabbi Sabalovsky. I didn't catch up with him today. I tried. He had walked out of these measures before I walked in, so I was not able to catch up with him. But I did have the opportunity to talk to Rav Schachter and to ask him what he thought about this. I brought my show and tell, and I showed him the how it works exactly, or to the best of my understanding, how it works. He didn't seem so impressed, which was kind of disappointing. you show it to someone, you want them to be like, "Wow, that's amazing." He's like, "Okay." But he had a lot to say in terms of halacha. So Rav Schachter thought that this isn't really recha. He said recha is when tiny particles of the food land on the other food in the amount that affects the fragrance but not the taste. That's recha. Over here, there are no tiny particles of the food going anywhere. It's just air. And air is never usser. Air can never become usser. The company says, the company, when they advertise, say, with our bottle, it's totally normal for small air bubbles to be included with each sip. Meaning, not just totally normal, that's the design, that there are small air bubbles included with each sip. These air bubbles carry the flavor from your pod and enable your brain to experience the scent as taste, all without anything being physically added to your water. Meaning all that's added to your water are air bubbles that are in the water. So Rav Shachter first suggested that, you know, when it goes into the water, maybe it becomes part of the water. And once it becomes part of the water, well, then maybe you have a problem. So even though while it was air, it was not a problem, but then it became part of the water. And when it becomes part of the water, it's a problem. And he compared it to what Tshuver of Chaim Moser has. Chaim Moser discusses why it is that many religious people will drink cognac or brandy, which is made with wine, so it's made with stam yenam. So how do they allow themselves to drink it? So Chaim Moser apparently has a tshuva. I did not have a chance to look it up. That the way they make it is they dehydrate all the alcohol, and the alcohol is then distilled and turned back into reconstituted into cognac or brandy. I assume that's an oversimplification of how it works. But the point is that Rav Chaim Moser suggests that in that process, it loses its status, and then when you reconstitute it, it's panim chadashos ba'olikan. So he's not willing to rely on that for dinim d'oraisa, but for yisurim d'rabbanan, he's willing to rely on that. But then Rav Shachter said, no, this case is even better. This case, l'chora, is better, because it never really affects the water. Haraya, if you spit the water out and drink it back again, you don't taste anything. What you are, it's just that you, it's more like if you were to take two foods and put them in your mouth at the same time, right? So you may confuse the taste of one for the other. So what this is doing is it's taking one non-food, which could never be a kashrus concern, called air, that happens to be fragrant air, and it's pushing that into your mouth at the same time that you have a perfectly kosher food that's coming into your mouth, and that is H2O, right? Just plain water. What's the kunz over here? The kunz is to get kids to drink more water, right? Like everyone says, you're supposed to drink a lot of water to make, you know, that's it's healthy to drink a lot of water, but kids don't want to drink water, and that's why soft drink industry is such a big industry, and that's really, that's like mamish poison to drink soft drink. Someone told me that Rav Blachman has a whole tirade about Coca-Cola, and if you put it through pipes, you'll see that it rusts and corrodes pipes. What do you think it does to your pipes? You know, things like that. But so it's a really, you know, important invention probably. But that's why Rav Shachter thought that, you know, I would want to give him some more time to think about it and maybe have someone who is more knowledgeable than me explain it, you know, explain exactly how it works. But he thought it was mutter. Then I was thinking about another issue that might come up. What if you're choking on something and you need some water, right? So not like choking where your mamish can't breathe, but like I had a cold not that long ago, and every time I was giving shiur, I started coughing. At some point during the shiur, I would start coughing uncontrollably. It was very embarrassing. I was giving a shiur in Stern College. I just like, I couldn't, I was just coughing constantly. So I needed water. So one of the young women from Stern realized there was no water in the room, ran down like 10 flights of stairs or something, ran back up. By the time she got up, one of the other girls realized that she had water in her bag and had given me water. But let's say, so what's the halacha if you're choking on something and you want to drink of water? So halacha is you do not recite a bracha, right? What about this water? Do you recite a bracha? Meaning the halacha is, if you're choking on something and you drink some iced tea, so you recite a bracha because it has flavor. If you're choking on something and you take a cup of water, you do not recite a bracha because it has no flavor and you're not taking it for nourishment or for hydration, you're taking it just to clear out your throat. What if you drink from this? So, yes bracha or no bracha? So, the argument can go that no bracha because it's just water, and the fact that you're also tasting something is secondary. It's something else that's happening at the same time that you're drinking the water. However, pashtus is, I think, that you would say a bracha, because it's not about what the metzius of the water is, it's about whether you're getting hana'as grono. Hana'as grono means that you're enjoying taste. whether it's because your brain is tricking you into enjoying the taste, or whether it's because you're actually enjoying the taste, it means that there's another function to the drinking. This, of course, is a sugya in Brachos Daf Mem Dalid, Ayein Sham. We are out of time, so we're not going to be Ayein Sham, but it's a fascinating sugya. I wrote about it in my second sefer, if anyone wants to look up that sugya. But that is preliminary findings on the issue of the air up water bottle. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.
Would you be able to use it on Shabbos?
Yeah, I don't see why not. What would be the issue on Shabbos? Molded Reyach?
Could it be
Borer?
I don't know.
Borer? Nah. I don't think so. I don't think it would be an issue.
So hypothetically, if they decided to make a pork flavored cap, would it be
mother or else? Oh, so that's another shayla. What if the flavor that they make it, I mean, we said before from Bir Alacha that you're not supposed to smell non-kosher things like Shami Yavu Le'achlo. What if it's a pork-flavored cap? Is it a concern of Shami Yavu Le'achlo that you might come to eat pork? I think the Bir Alacha said that you're not supposed to smell non-kosher food because you might eat it. But something that just mimics the flavor, it's like, you know what they have? They have like those chips that are, you know, that know you on it. It's like, you know, pork grind flavored. So that's not, I don't think that's from.
Have you seen an argument being made in the last case of drinking the water just to calm a coughing spasm to make a grape nib instead? Because that's where the flavor is really coming from?
To make a bar name for some.
Or in any case, to make a
I don't think so. Meaning you imbibe it through your mouth. Meaning if your brain thinks that you're having it as water, then it's, you know, you're having it as you know, a food or a drink. So then halachically it's a food or a drink. I don't think we would say otherwise.
Why would the bar name be telling on through which nose versus mouth? Why would that affect the broth?
Because that's how we typically smell things, and that's how we typically eat things.
But then the thing that you're getting on from is the sense. Is the sense? It's not from the actual.
Right, but I think a lot of times in halacha we go with how we perceive things rather than, you know, what the reality is. You know, like with microscopic bugs and things like that. It's based on our perception. Okay, I can't get my recorder to shut off, and if I just pull out the battery to make it shut off, the recording will be gone forever. Okay, have a great Shabbos.
If you let it just drip down, it should not quite want to work also? Like from a distance, from like a foot or two? Would that work?
That is a good question.
I think the whole. Like,
no, I think you need to suck it through. Yeah. You got to suck it through. That's how it gets the air through the.
It's a crazy idea.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. Smart people working on problems. Okay. Take care. Good Shabbos. Thanks for coming. Turning off. Okay. Oh, gosh. Who did?
Rabbi Stein.
Like Rabbi Daniel Stein?
Yeah.
Yeah. In a journal somewhere?
Or a web.
Oh. About whether it needs hashkach, or just not about.
Included,
oh, okay. Okay, sounds good. Well, the kolisha thing we shut up about is not kolisha. Not for that. Three words. Not derech anything.
Voice lessons are enjoyable.
Yes, I would imagine they don't look enjoyable. It doesn't sound enjoyable now.